You're with The Record on KUOW. I'm Marcy Silman.
I'm Ross Reynolds. Hey, Marcy, do you do yoga?
I do. Ashtanga yoga, but sometimes it's not always friendly to my body.
You know, I always think that's one of those things I should be doing is yoga, but I haven't quite gotten to it. I learned a lot about it from William Broad when I talked to him about his book, The Science of Yoga. It's a great history, and it suggests that some yoga instructors may be less than careful. William Broad is a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer with the New York Times. Here's our conversation. Here's my 23-word description of what you say in this book. Yoga is great, and some of the claims of it are bogus, and you can really get hurt if you don't watch out. I'm sure I left a lot of details out, but is that
No, that's the nub of it.
Okay.
I mean, I've been doing it for a long time. I love it. It does wonderful things. It can zip up all kinds of stuff in your life, but be careful. There are some low-risk dangers that have enormous consequences, like strokes, where you lose part of your brain. That's a bad day at work. It's a bad day in the yoga class, and there's simple things you can do to avoid that. So a little bit of knowledge in this business can go a long way.
There's a great history of yoga at the beginning of the book about its magical roots and its mystical roots. You quote an Indian scholar saying a half century ago that the beginner is apt to be repulsed by the confusion and exaggerated statements about yoga, and then you say, today the situation is worse. How so?
Oh, because of the info paralysis that we're all struggling with, because publishing has gone wild electronically and every other way. There are so many there are thousands of claims made about what yoga can do. Websites will tell you that yoga will cure cancer. Websites will tell you just about everything short of, bringing you back from the dead. It's all due to the magical powers of yoga. So the stuff is everywhere, and the question is, what's real and what's not? That was what the goal I set for myself with this book, trying to figure it out and cut through a lot of the nonsense.
You've done yoga for 42 years, Bill, but you write the risks and benefits are greater than you imagined, both sides of the equation. You found out about the risks firsthand from a yoga injury. What happened to you?
It was 2007. I was in a teacher training course. We were trying some advanced poses. We had paired off with a partner, and my partner was gorgeous. And I started chatting while I was doing the pose and was focusing more on her than on my weak lower back, and the back went out. And it was a very bad day at yoga. The pain was incredible. I collapsed. I was crying. I hit a wall. Everybody gathered around me. The poor old guy, what happened? And it took about 2 months to recover.
Wow. Now, what was the advanced pose that you were trying to do there?
Well, it's not that advanced. It's called an extended side angle. It's kind of a triangular type pose where you lean way over to the side. And I was going, farther than I'd ever gone before, which was the problem.
Yeah, your self-diagnosis is you just weren't paying attention as you came out of that pose.
I was not paying attention. Yoga, probably the biggest danger of yoga is doing just what I was doing, being distracted. You need to pay attention to your own body and those invisible thresholds. Make sure that you don't go over them. Pain is a good signal. Pay attention to that.
The downside is considerable for making these mistakes. As you mentioned before, strokes and even brain damage?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. People, you go through the clinical literature, one after another. These people are having serious brain issues because of yoga. And a lot of people who read the Times excerpt said, this is old research, he's exaggerating it. Well, I don't want to hype this. It's clear that these are low-level risks, but the consequences are very high. And I got deluged with hundreds of emails and letters in the wake of that article, and several of them referred to stroke. And the descriptions of what these people went through were quite moving. This one guy, after doing yoga, he gets hit. He's on the bathroom floor. He's kind of drowning in his own vomit. He gets taken away to an emergency room. And, 1 year later, he writes me to tell me that his life is, he's in emotional and physical turmoil still. He's still in therapy. He's still trying to work it through. Now, neuroplasticity and the wonders of therapy can help stroke victims, and they can make great recovery. But it's a struggle, and it takes hard work. And for that kind of serious consequence, why not take the simple precaution of not doing the dangerous pose?
Are there problematic poses that really people should be considering closely if they want to try to do them that have been linked to these problems?
Sure. Everybody has to make this decision for themselves. My decision is that I'm not going to do the shoulder stand or the plow position anymore. They are just too darn dangerous for my practice.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is you bend your neck a lot, and through the vertebrae of your neck are these delicate arteries called the vertebral arteries. You tear the delicate inner lining of those arteries, and clots will start to form. They can either close the artery right there, or the clots can flow into the brain, and you have a stroke, brain damage. It's nasty stuff you don't want to deal with, and it's a low-level risk, but their consequences are extremely high, so it's something I can live without.
If you just tuned in, Bill Broad is an avid practitioner of yoga, but he has looked at some of the dangers, and he's looked at the history of it and extensively explored what the scientific articles have said about it for his new book, The Science of Yoga. Well, you mentioned one of the criticisms you're getting is people saying, oh, this is old news, and you actually track it back to the information about yoga injuries at least 10 years. It sounds as though there's been information out there for a while, but has it really permeated the practice?
I would say on balance, not. I mean, yoga gets sold oftentimes as sort of gentle, safe, perfect. It has this wonderful imagery of coming from antiquity and being sort of a cure-all for everything that ails us in the modern world. Well, the truth, as I try to lay out in the book, is that the yoga we all practice is a refurbished version of Hatha that was invented in the 1920s and 1930s. There are, some poses that carry over from an older time, but most of them are new. And, some of them do wonderful things. Some of them probably should be avoided today.
I want to get to the rewards because the book is about both the risks and the rewards. But one of the kind of amazing things to me is you recount how many yoga instructors have been injured, something they don't talk about.
Yeah, the Glenn Black, who was profiled in the magazine article and leads chapter, my injury chapter in the book, is a wonderful, talented body worker and yogi. And he's so good that he ministers to many celebrity yogis and people who have national reputations and go and have taught class after class, appear on television, go to these symposia, and oftentimes have suffered terrible injuries. Have had to have hip replacements, have had downward dogs that destroy their Achilles tendons. And it's sort of this unmentionable part of contemporary yoga that is very misleading, right? Because you can't, the false advertising and the imagery is so positive, and yet there are these dangers out there, and even top teachers suffer them, and it's a... it's smart, I think, to pay attention to some of these warning signs.
You know, of course, we should pay attention ourselves, but when you're going to learn something, shouldn't the responsibility be the instructors?
That's also one of the big problems. Many of the instructors are green. If you have a wonderful, talented instructor who's been doing this for a long time, they take you slowly, they know the warning signs, they do have a lot of responsibility. They are like Glenn Black, this guy who I studied with. He watched us like a hawk. You could see him evaluating every person in that room. He would walk around constantly and look at us, and you could see him assessing, should they go farther? Should we cut back a little bit? And he would change poses in mid-stride or change routine in mid-stride to tailor it to us, to the individual capabilities in that room. You get a green teacher who has just come out of a diploma mill, and believe me, that's the way a lot of money is made in yoga. You don't make it that much money teaching, but you can make a lot of money by churning out new yoga teachers. So there are these mills that just grant these certifications right and left, and you get a green teacher that thinks they know a lot, and you can get yourself in some real deep water.
I do want to focus on some of the positive aspects that you also looked at the science for. In the early days of yoga, the master practitioners would say they were putting themselves into a suspended animation, which
right.
You write that wasn't strictly true,
right.
But it actually points to some of the positive aspects of the practice of yoga.
Huge, huge positive stuff. And the main thing is that yoga de-stresses you. It relaxes you. It unplugs you. It's the one thing that everybody knows about. But you also get this feel-good feeling. It was the thing that I experienced when I started doing yoga in 1970. And there's really good science these days showing why that is. At Harvard and Boston University, there's been a pair of excellent studies that look at how yoga releases neurotransmitters in the brain that act as strong antidepressants. And these chemicals are called GABA. They are exactly the same substances that a lot of very costly neuropharmaceutical drugs target. So you can do this stuff naturally. Lift your moods with yoga instead of paying a lot of money for prescription drugs.
Yoga used in India was at one time considered vaguely disreputable because of its association with sex, but the science shows that there actually is something to it bringing about sexual renewal?
Absolutely. I kind of rehashed some of the stuff in the book in an article on Tuesday in the New York Times, and it details some of that science. It raises testosterone levels. There are characteristic brain waves of feeling good and sexual acts that yoga, you know, gets you right there. There's been a beautiful study at the University of British Columbia, just up the street from you guys, where they showed that fast breathing, which gets done in a lot of yoga classes, creates strong blood flow through the genitals. You know, one thing after another points to strong clinical evidence that yoga can raise your levels of sexual arousal and be a good thing for your sex life.
Yoga, not a great way to lose weight, though?
No, that's one of the myths that falls, and it follows from this whole metabolic slowing. If you are lowering your metabolism and everything else is equal, you have the same number of calories every day, then you are going to deposit new layers of fat. You're going to gain weight. Now, I don't want to oversimplify this because yoga does lots of other good things that can help you fight weight gain and help you lose weight. It builds discipline. The relaxation factor helps you break the stress eating cycle. So it's easier to push away from the table or the refrigerator or that incredibly delicious thing in the window of the store there that you used to break down and have. So you can, most yoga teachers, I would say, are live. They're not lumpy. But if they've achieved that state, it's despite what's happening metabolically rather than because of it. And so many yoga books talk about, oh, this will rev up your metabolism and this will get, you know, things roaring and you'll just burn the calories. There's no science study that supports it. In fact, there's a century and a half of metabolic studies that suggest otherwise.
Pulitzer Prize-winning writer William Broad, I was talking to him about his book, The Science of Yoga, quite controversial when it came out and when he wrote those stories for the New York Times. It's about both the risks and the rewards of yoga. You can find a full version of that interview at our website, kuow.org. Just search for the word yoga. You're listening to The Record on KUOW with Marcy Silman. I'm Ross Reynolds.